supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a very frequently asked question. I'd say it has now become 50-50 when we get an email or a phone call about clover. Half of the people want to get rid of it in their lawn. Other people want to add it to their lawn, add the number of clovers in their lawn higher, or they want to replace their lawn with clover. So we're going to have a pro-clover question of the week. Otherwise, it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heaping helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Jared, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I am doing well today, sir. How is Jared?
I have high anxiety over a bunch of evergreens that I bought and had planted about a month ago now.
Okay, and where are Jared's evergreens of annoyance?
They are in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia. So what has you concerned, Jared?
All right, I bought a mixed bag, cryptomeria, pine, Norway spruce, a moonbeam, and a green giant arborvitae. Because I'm trying to build along the property line that I spent two summers clearing out, kind of a natural-looking screen with the cul-de-sac behind me.
Okay, so natural-looking by mixing up the plantings, and I'm hoping that you didn't plant them in a straight line, that you staggered them a bit.
On the sides that you can see them, but the back is kind of just for my personal screening, so they are somewhat of a straight line along the property line. You're talking like 25 feet minimum between trees.
Oh, my God, you actually gave room for these plants to grow. What a man.
Yeah. Well, I bought them relatively big. I mean, they were the burlap and wire balls.
Right.
That are a couple hundred pounds a piece, probably. But
they
I managed to get them in the hole, and I was told, and I looked online, and I've been told by several people, just put them in the hole like that. They'll grow through the burlap. They'll grow through the wire.
Oh, God, they're dying already.
Well, so I did. I wetted them down. I wetted the hole. I mixed up some good dirt with peat moss, and I packed it all around there.
I want you to go back to every website and every person who gave you that advice and give them a dope slap of one kind or another. I wish you had gone to my website. We have a little tutorial there, just 1,000 words on how to plant a tree that would have prevented all this. You're going to have to dig them up and replant them. You've got to try to save these things.
I was hoping you wouldn't say that, but I don't want to lose the trees, so
you got two choices, man. You can either watch them further brown away, or you can dig them up and try to resuscitate them. What you're going to have to do is get some help, tip the trees out of the ground. They certainly haven't rooted. There's no way their roots can get out into the ground. Get that wire frame off them, take off the burlap completely, and then take out all that nice loose soil you put into the hole, and replace it with your native soil, whatever it is, whether it's clay or sand. The advice to improve the soil in the hole was redacted 25 years ago. So, you know, because you're girdling the roots on two levels. First, if the roots are trapped in a burlap bag and surrounded by a steel cage, they can't spread out laterally the way they must. And I know people tell you that, oh, they'll find their way out or the burlap will rot. Not after you cover them underground. They're finding newspapers and old landfills from the 60s you can read because they were buried underground. That stuff will rot at its slowest possible pace. And burlap is made not to rot. So that stuff all has to come off. Refill the hole with your native soil. And then make sure you do not plant the trees deeply. Make sure there's a lot of soil in the hole, so that when the tree is planted and the soil is leveled out, you can see the root flare. You don't want any lollipops growing up out of the ground. I know it's counterintuitive, but a tree that's planted a little too high is going to live a lot longer than a tree that's planted a little too low. So make sure you plant high, get rid of all the wrappings. When you're done, put a nice mulch of an inch of compost on top of the soil. And then after you replant each of these puppies, make sure a hose drips at the base of the tree. Just drip, drip, drip for 24 hours. And
okay.
then water them deeply for a couple of hours twice a week in any week we don't get rain.
Okay, and should I expect to know if they're going to make it or not until the spring? I mean, would I see more yellowing, or I'll just have to kind of...
They've only been restrained for like a month and planted underground, and they looked green when you got them.
Yep.
I think you can save them.
That's great news.
But there's no time to lose, and don't do it halfway. And go back and yell at every single person who told you that. Tell them not to tell that to anybody again, or I will come, and I'll give them a real slap.
That's something I'm pretty good at, too, so I will do that.
You go.
I appreciate it.
Go get them, Jared.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Stephanie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. How are you?
I am fabulous.
And where is Stephanie fabulous?
Stephanie is fabulous in northwest Missouri. I live in a little town called Kidder.
And are you a Kidder?
Am I a Kidder?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
All right. So what, I love Kidder, Missouri. I like that. What can we do for Stephanie in Kidder, Missouri?
I have a semi-dwarf self-pollinating apple tree, and this spring I planted a pink lady apple tree. Since we had an early spring, it was already pollinated and apples were already starting to grow on it. And what I need to know is, will my self-pollinating apple tree pollinate the pink lady next year, or do I need to plant another apple tree?
Well, these terms are all kind of confusing. You can grow a single apple tree and get apples because the bees and other pollinators will go from apple blossom to apple blossom. When you have more apple trees in the area and the bees going back and forth between the trees, you tend to get higher quality fruits and more of them. The important things with apples, pollination is easy, but the actual care of apples to make sure you get edible fruit is difficult. This is possibly the second hardest plant to grow and
mm-hmm.
get high quality fruit from, my peaches being number one. So over, you want to do nothing to the trees now. They're planted in the ground. They're happy, right?
Yes.
There's no mulch touching their trunks, is there?
No.
But that sounded like a bad answer in a homicide investigation.
Well, it depends on what you're calling mulch. My husband is a carpenter, and he was we're remodeling our house, and the wood shavings that he uses, I kind of go and I put them around the trees to keep moisture in.
Okay,
put them around the trees and my bushes.
Get rid of them.
Get rid of them.
Yes.
Okay, I can't have any of that touching the trees.
No. And fresh wood saps nitrogen from the area. It breeds fungal spores. It breeds disease. Wood mulch, after it's cured, is acceptable in some situations. You don't want it under tomatoes, fruit trees, lilacs, other disease-prone plants.
Okay.
You really can't ever freehand anything again, Stephanie, with the apple trees. You're really going to have to do research. This is not the kind of plant that tolerates, oh, I had a good idea. So no wood mulch underneath. If you have any compost, you may and should spread compost underneath the tree. Because in Missouri...
I have lots of compost. We have a cattle farm, so...
Okay, that's not compost.
Cattle and horses. Oh, it's
okay,
not compost.
That's not compost.
Okay. Can I use that?
No.
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 Okay.
No. Two strikes. Okay? The pitcher's looking at you right now. We got a runner on third. You got to knock him home, Steph. No more strikes.
Okay.
Manures are very high in nitrogen. Nitrogen
okay.
causes plants to grow big and fast, and it attracts insect pests. It also limits fruiting. You've named two of the things that you should never use in an orchard. I hope you haven't been putting the manure down around the trees.
Well, actually, when I dug the hole, I stuck manure in the hole.
Okay, you weren't supposed to improve. Strike three. You're out. Sit down, Steph.
Well, I thought it was would help.
Okay, you can't think that way anymore, okay? No more manure, no more wood mulch. True compost, which is shredded leaves mostly, and maybe some
And
kitchen waste with that. In the late winter, you're going to have to prune these trees heavily. Have you researched apple tree pruning?
No.
Okay, you can't just leave them alone. They must be pruned every year. You need to remove any branches that are sticking straight up, any branches that are crossing, and you have to open up the center of the tree. Then, after you prune and after all the flowers have begun to form little fruits, you have to remove at least 3/4 of the little fruits. If you leave them all on the tree, you won't get any full-sized apples.
Okay.
So there's a lot of work to be done at the end of winter, early spring. I also want you to go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, and read the tree planting and fruit tree care articles and follow those carefully. You'll also want to look up detailed instructions on the pruning, which is vitally important. I hope you knew this going into this, but apples are not easy care. They're like having dogs instead of cats. They require a lot of attention. But if you do this right, you'll get great apples as a reward.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate the information.
All right, good luck, Steph.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll once again be honored to host the Empty Bowl Benefit Dinner for the Homeless at Chestnut Hill College on Wednesday, November 14th, and urge those of you outside the Philadelphia area to seek out an Empty Bowl event near you. It's a great way to help ensure that nobody's bowl goes empty. But don't you go search an Empty Bowl Benefit just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and how to incorporate clover into your lawn and maybe even have a lawn of nothing but clover. I'm Cloverishus Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, the national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds gardeners that fall is the ideal time to plant gourmet garlic, perennial plants, bulbs for spring blooms, and especially fruit plants. More information at burpee.com.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
Wintertour presents Uncorked, Wine, Objects, and Tradition, now open in the Wintertour Galleries. This exhibit celebrates objects and imagery created in response to society's love of wine. More than 300 British and American wine-related items are on view, illustrating the historic role wine played in the worlds of design, international trade, and social life. Details on lectures, wine tastings, tours, and tickets at wintertour.org. Wintertour supports WHYY.
WHYY is supported by Works For Me, funded by CMS grant CFDA number 93.768. Works For Me offers hiring tips, training, and help finding employees. Details at worksforme-pa.org/employer.
Checking the WHYY forecast. Really nice today. Sunny and breezy, and the high temperature shouldn't get to be too much more than where it is now, which is at about 64 degrees. Tonight, starry skies with a low of 45. Tomorrow, sunshine, high in the mid-60s. And Monday, sunshine with a high of about 68.
Bartlett Tree Experts supports WHYY and offers the removal of hazardous trees and scientific treatments including pruning and disease diagnoses. Locations in Montgomery, Chester, and Bucks counties, and Cherry Hill, New Jersey. More information at Bartlett.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, many people think of clover as a lawn weed, but an increasing number like having clover in their lawn, and many people are wondering if they could have a lawn of nothing but clover. We'll answer those pressing questions later on. In the meantime, lots more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Brian, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you?
I'm doing good, Brian. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you.
And where is Brian very well?
I'm in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what a pleasure to speak to you, a far-flung a gardener. Are you a native? Are you working over there? What's your original nationality?
Yeah, I'm British. I'm an expat. I work over here and have been here for just about 5 years now, yes.
And do you enjoy it? It's a very different climate than Britain, huh?
Yes, it is different. The summer takes a couple of years to get used to. It is extremely unpleasant sometimes in summer, but the winters are excellent, really nice. From about November to April, it's beautiful.
What can we do for you, Bri?
Well, I was just—I saw your website, and I thought it'd be interesting to get some advice about, particularly composting and feeding, and how much you should feed, and how much is it possible to overfeed, especially when you're trying to get flowers to come and bloom, things like that. Because the soil, of course, is virtually just sand; it's pretty sterile.
When I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine, we had a lot of readers in Arizona in areas that are very similar to yours, and a lot of the things they would have to do were backwards of what we would have to do in a cooler climate. One of the first things I learned, and you will believe it or not, get a lot of gardening information from the Arizona State Extension System website. Every state in the United States has what's called a land-grant university and an extension system with a big office for the whole state and then local offices. And Arizona has a lot of information for people who garden specifically in desert climates that are very similar to you. And it was from a bulletin from the Arizona State Extension Service that I learned the best way for people like you to compost is in a pit in the ground as opposed to above ground, whereby we in the north should always compost above ground. You should bury your raw material shredded in a pit. So that's the way you can help keep your compost moist without watering it, is get it down as low as possible. And of course, because of your heat, you'll make compost very quickly as long as you can keep adding ingredients that contain some moisture. So with you, I would encourage you, unless there's like vermin around or problems, to add a lot of kitchen waste and coffee grounds never attract vermin and they're nice and moist. But add wet materials. What do you have to compost with, though? You don't have any deciduous trees, do you?
No, we don't. That's true. I have three trees in the garden, but they don't shed very much. I have a small piece of lawn area, but you don't get a lot of grass clippings from that. But obviously just kitchen waste, as you suggest, things like coffee grounds and what have you.
Would it be possible for you to have a worm bin indoors?
How big would it have to be?
They don't have to be big at all. Many people make them out of those Rubbermaid storage containers that like people put Christmas decorations in. I have one that's a kind of a worm condo of stacking bins. And that one has a much smaller footprint and can go as tall as you want. You keep adding units to it. But that would give you really high quality compost, and because it would be indoors with worms, it's very safe to work all your kitchen waste through, and you could make a large amount of worm castings. So what are you growing successfully, and what do you want to try to grow?
Well, so far, I have three trees which are almost 4 years old. Two of them are called Neem.
Oh, excellent.
I have I think we call them a flame tree here, or a royal poinciana, I think, is it's a less popular name. That's very nice. So I don't have any problem with those. I'm having a go at two lemon trees, one on an espalier and one as a freestanding. But they're juvenile. They're still young, so it's touch and go with them.
Well, you know, the limiting factor with citrus is always going to be moisture in the soil. So that's where, you know, whatever organic matter you can get, any kind of compost, any kind of worm castings, but you want to just keep adding organic matter to the top of the soil around the trees and do everything you can to keep that area moist. How often do you get rain?
Almost never.
Yeah. And so do you have access to irrigation water?
Yeah, we have a separate tank and a pump, so there's a spray, like a pop-up spray system for the grass,
right,
and a drip feed system for where the sort of herbaceous, the border area, yeah.
I would recommend putting a drip line around each of the citrus trees and really trying to increase the organic matter in that soil. There is a technique that's used in desert gardening, whereby if you have large areas that are unplanted, that are just sand, you get a tamper, one of those just mechanical devices with a big flat end, mm-hmm. and you tamp down the sand in patterns so that when these rains do come, the rain is channeled to your true citrus trees. So when you do get rain, I would suggest you do that water diversion. But keeping the area covered and moist around those citrus trees, I think you'll get tremendous amounts of fruit from them. All right, Bri?
Thank you very much for your help.
Well, thank you very much for calling. It's great to hear from you, and we really wish you well.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Take care. 1-888-346-9499. Maria, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Maria. How are you?
I'm fine. How are yourself?
I am doing very well, thank you. Where is Maria Fine?
Collegeville, Pennsylvania.
I know where that is. Not far from Philadelphia.
Nope, not at all.
What can we do for Maria in Collegeville?
Well, I have I had three hornbeam trees that were planted all in the same grouping. Two, basically, as they grew, they would look like one tree with three trunks.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, one of the trees started to die off at the top and then eventually just died. Now I'm finding the other two trees are having the same problem, and I'm trying to figure out what it could be and what, if anything, I can do to save them.
Did you plant them yourself?
No, I did not. It was a gentleman that did landscaping.
Okay, and when was this?
This was about... Actually, it was about 15 years ago.
Okay,
it was
about
12 to 15 years.
Any planting mistakes he made would have shown up long before this.
Oh, yes, I would have think.
Now, and they are very slow-growing trees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are they mulched or fed?
They are mulched. No, they're not fed per se. I will say that from time to time I have put on a feed on them, the granules, but that's about it.
Okay, and how are they mulched?
Well, primarily what I have around the bed that they're on is vinca. So that's what's on there. And then what I do
That's not a mulch. You mean there's a ground cover growing?
There's a ground cover, but I also do a little bit of mulching around the trunks itself because I remove some of the vinca. But the mulch is not up to like a mound or anything like that.
And what is it?
Oh, the type of mulch? It's basically just your triple shredded mulch.
Okay. Well, you know, that kills trees.
I did not know that.
Yes. The only reason that's sold to you is because they can't landfill it anymore.
Oh, my.
There was never any horticultural reason to use these triple ground premium shredded wood mulches. I mean, my producers are just shaking their head. They've listened to 14 years of dead tree explanations. And
oh, my Lord.
People still don't get it. No, wood mulch kills trees, period. It stresses them, as does the chemical fertilizer you've spread at their base. Wait a minute, we're not done yet. You still have one more pitch coming, as does the ground cover underneath, which is competing with them for moisture and nutrients. Mm. So that's three strikes. At least we know why your trees are dying.
Yep.
So get rid of the wood mulch.
Okay.
The vinca should be kept at least, I'm going to say, 2 feet away from any trunk.
Okay.
And if you want to mulch with something, you always start 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree and then mulch outward. That's how you cover the root portion of the soil.
Okay.
It's useless to mulch against a tree or next to a tree. There's nothing there to protect. The roots that you want to keep moist and from competition from other plants are often growing out as far as the canopy of the plant. And how many are dead or diseased?
The two that are left.
So one has already been removed.
Yes.
And the other two...
have the same signs.
Which is?
I'm seeing the top of the tree not showing any foliage. Basically, there's no leaves.
And that was just this spring or in previous
just
springs?
Just this spring.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay, so here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
We're going to... This is a good time of year to transplant vinca.
Okay.
So you can move it someplace else, but get as much of it out of there as you can.
Okay.
Make sure the two remaining trees have at least 2 or 3 feet of space in all directions.
Okay.
Get rid of the wood mulch. Don't use any more chemical fertilizers.
Okay.
You can put down a little mulch of compost if you can find high-quality compost.
Okay.
Then wait till the dead of winter. and then either you or a professional get up there on a ladder and prune away any obviously dead areas.
Okay?
Okay.
Then
in the spring, when the trees leaf out, I want you to pay careful attention to the tops again, to the canopy. And because sometimes it's hard to tell what's dead in the middle of winter, but that's the best time to prune. When the trees start growing again, I want somebody to go up there again on a ladder. You know, this isn't that tall. You know, we should be able to get up there safely. And after we're sure that the trees are regrowing again for the spring, cut away any parts that are leafless. Cut away any dead parts. The combination of getting rid of these three stressors, the wood mulch, the chemical fertilizer, and the ground cover, and then removing the dead parts, you may rejuvenate these trees like nobody's business.
Oh, wonderful. So there's hope yet. Thank you so very much.
All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Rich, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, how you doing? Great show. I really appreciate the information.
Well, thank you, Rich. How kind of you. Where are you, sir?
Northeast Philadelphia.
Okay. Whereabouts?
Somerton neighborhood, basically right behind where the old Byberry Mental Hospital was.
Oh, okay. My parents always threatened to put me in Byberry.
Well, this tree's going to put me in there. They refilled it. So. But we had this house, purchased a house that was originally built in 67. We purchased it in 01. And the original owner had taken this seedling from Fairmount Park or whatever and dropped it right on his front lawn there. So by the time we got to it in 2001, this thing was massive, and it was touching three houses. So we had to take it out because it was just ridiculous having this right on our front lawn in front of a twin. We had the tree taken down and the stump ground down as much as they could.
Oh.
And then after a couple of years, we had more work done to the front where we had our driveway moved over and a stone wall put up, had everything turned over and new topsoil and then resodded the whole front lawn.
And did you have the stump pulled at that time?
A little bit more of the stump was pulled out, yes, because they had to get some of it out to be able to put the concrete slabs down and the new stone wall.
But there's still lots of wood underneath your ground.
I'm sure there is. This thing was massive.
And so you have mushrooms and various nuisance molds growing up all through your lawn.
Out of nowhere, three seasons ago, we had one little area of these mushrooms popped up, and we were curious, like, what was this thing? And then I pulled it out, and it never came. Didn't come back until last year. And next thing you know, last year it came back tenfold. And this year they came back. They're all over the front lawn. It's unbelievable.
So do you want the good news or the bad news? The bad news is that anytime you get a tree cut down, you should always have the stump pulled. Otherwise, it's difficult to replant anything there because the wood is acting as a plug in the ground, and it's a lot of wood in the ground which steals nitrogen from other plants. It's actually taking food from your lawn as you're trying to feed your lawn. The good news is that it's being successful.
Okay.
Because the mushrooms are a sign that the roots are finally rotting. They're absorbing. Are you using a chemical fertilizer on your lawn?
Just use like the Scotts.
That would be a yes then, Rich. That would be a yes. I'm using chemical fertilizer on my lawn.
Okay.
And all that excessive nitrogen, which is also running into our fragile waterways, thank you very much, is it combining with that wood underground and accelerating the rotting of the wood. So, you know, either you're going to tear up your lawn and dig up most of these roots to be done with it and replant it, which you could only do successfully in August anyway, so you missed your window.
Okay.
Stop with the chemical fertilizers. You know they're wrong. You shouldn't be using them. Switch to a gentle organic fertilizer, just a nice level of nitrogen, just like a 9 or a 10 for the first number, not a 600.
Okay.
And that'll be perfectly enough to feed your lawn. You should also be mulching your clippings back into your lawn. That'll be enough to feed your lawn without pushing this mushroom thing too hard. How do you water your lawn?
Just here and there. I mean, throughout the summer. We don't excessively water it. So.
Okay, but you might water it every day for a hot week.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You need to switch to deep waterings once a week when you don't get rain.
Right, okay.
The more you take good care of this lawn, the fewer mushrooms you'll have. And
okay.
Finally, this is a great time to get a soil test done.
Okay.
Contact your local extension office, or if you do business with a real nursery or garden center, they can often send the sample off for you, or just get a pH test kit. You want to find out what the alkalinity or acidity of your soil is.
Okay.
Lawns grow best in a pH of 6.5 to 7, slightly acidic to neutral. Mushrooms and other fungi grow best in very acid soils. So if the soil in your lawn is a little acid, you can bring up the pH by adding some lime or ashes from a hardwood stove. That'll be good for your lawn, and it'll suppress the mushrooms.
Okay.
If you get a kind of a normal year where you're paying attention,
mm-hmm.
you're not feeding with chemicals, you're keeping the pH correct, and when you water, you're only watering deeply and once a week, you might not see any.
Okay, great.
All right?
All right,
and everybody else out there, when you get a tree cut down, pull the stump, get it over with, get it done. Good luck to you, sir.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind folks that shows like You Bet Your Garden exist only thanks to member support. If you're listening to us on a broadcast station, please be or become a member of that wonderful station. If we're not on a broadcast station in your area and you listen to us online or via our podcast, please consider becoming a member of our station of origin, WHYY in Philadelphia. Maybe we'll even send you a mug. But don't go searching for the pledge page at WHYY.org just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and how to establish clover as your new lawn. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden.
Burpee, the national supplier of seeds, plants, and bulbs, supports You Bet Your Garden and reminds gardeners that fall is the ideal time to plant gourmet garlic, perennial plants, bulbs for spring blooms, and especially fruit plants. More information at burpee.com.
The Splendid Table is set for noon, and then at 1, it's Fresh Air Weekend. Singer and pianist Michael Feinstein will join us. He'll talk about George and Ira Gershwin and their songs. Feinstein worked with Ira as his archivist in the 6 years before Gershwin's death. Also, Tyler Perry talks about writing, directing, and starring in his films and his latest turn as an action hero. Fresh Air Weekend comes your way at 1 today on WHYY.
The Geographical Society of Philadelphia supports WHYY and presents a season of film, adventure, and food from around the world. Society events run through May at various Philadelphia and mainline venues. The four-day GeoFest begins November 7th with the National Geographic Genographic Project and ends with the Digital Nomads Journey from D.C. to Antarctica. Information at geographicalsociety.org or 610-649-5220. The Geographical Society of Philadelphia. It's almost like being there.
Supporting WHYY, Trader Joe's, traveling the world to source a variety of foods and beverages, like their sweet and tart hibiscus cranberry juice. Locations and more at TraderJoe's.com.
Supporting WHYY, Glenn Mead, an independent investment and wealth management firm for families, family offices, and endowments and foundations seeking thoughtful advice generation after generation. Details are available from Chip Wilson at 215-419-6100.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll tackle the question of the week. What can we do to increase the amount of clover in our lawn and or get rid of the grass altogether and just be rolling in the clover? We'll tell you exactly how to achieve both those ends after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Jody, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. It's nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you, Jody. Where are you?
I'm in Zimmerman, Minnesota.
Zimmerman? It's not named for Robert Zimmerman, is it?
No, nobody really knows who it's named for.
Later became Bob Dylan. You know,
I
think there's a musical trail that needs to be followed. Let's call Nick Spitzer. Let's get right on this.
That sounds good.
What can we do for you, Jody?
Well, I have a farm here, and I grow everything organically. I have for years and years, and I am very committed to that. My problem is I have these horrible invasive trees. They're called a Siberian elm or a Chinese elm.
No. Stop right there. Because those are two very different plants.
Okay, well, I guess I've looked them up, and I've come across both names.
Yes, Siberian elm is a tremendously invasive, problematic plant that is, I believe, doing the most mischief in the state of Minnesota, whereby true Chinese elms are landscape plants and have a couple of issues. Their roots lift up sidewalks and stuff if they're not planted far enough away from structures. But otherwise, they're likable plants. My understanding is there is nothing to like about the Siberian elm.
Well, that's what I have, apparently. There is nothing to like about them at all. They grow 5 to 10 feet in a growing season. They'll grow anywhere and everywhere. In the spring, when the ground is wet, I can get them out with the root and everything with a weed wrench.
Oh, but good for you. I love that tool.
Yeah, it's a great tool. But once the ground dries, I can't even begin to move them. They're everywhere. They're not only in my apple orchard. I have a 4-acre organic apple orchard. They are also under the deck and in the lawn. Of course, mowing helps keep them somewhat contained. But I've got hay fields, pastures. They just grow everywhere.
Well, they are a very noxious, invasive tree. I believe, like I said, that causes a lot of damage in your area because, let's face it, Jody, Minnesota is the Siberia of the United States, right?
Oh, don't remind me. It's cold today.
I was going to say, well, your 3 weeks of summer is over. I mean,
that's about it.
I hope you enjoyed it. It didn't get, you know, it was light for 19 hours a day, wasn't it?
Yes, that part is good, but yeah, it's getting cold now. I'm not looking forward to it.
With invasive plants like this, mowing is good. The weed wrench, which I urge anyone with invasive plant issues to look up, is a great tool. I was talking with our good friend Bill Quarles from the BIRC, the Biointegral Resource Center in Berkeley, California, recently. And this topic came up because a lot of times people will be told to cut the trees down, paint the stumps with Roundup. And Bill told me two things. First, he said that doesn't work very well on these trees. And he said, second, girdling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting technique. Now, typically, girdling comes up on this show when I explain to people who planted trees that still had the burlap balls wrapped around them, or people who accidentally or tied up their trees for support and never took the support off, that they can, quote, girdle the roots or girdle the tree. It turns out your Siberian elms have like a weird, almost DC comic character weakness. It's almost like kryptonite or the color yellow or something. In that, if you, doesn't matter the size of a tree, if you girdle it correctly, and you have to follow a little process, it's not difficult to do, but you have to do it exactly correctly, The tree will die and not resprout. One thing we haven't talked about is if you cut these suckers down, they just grow right back from the stump.
Oh, they do. They're horrible.
Not if you girdle them correctly.
Okay.
And if you look online, you want to search the words girdling Siberian elms, you'll get some detailed instructions on exactly how to do this.
Okay.
And then, but the issue, of course, and this is something else we haven't talked about, you know, so people can fear these trees even more, I'm sure billions of seeds are blowing in from all sides, from neighbors' trees.
Yes, they do.
If you could establish a herd of goats, a specific breed of goats that are known generally as weeder goats, And protect them from predators, it turns out these creatures are better than herbicides at controlling invasive plants. They have a natural tendency to eat the young invasives and often not bother newly planted, wanted plants. they have a lot of benefits. The issue, as with chickens, is they must be protected from predators. And I understand you have some pretty fierce predators roaming your area.
We do, but I've got chickens, and I protect them and horses and whatnot. So that actually isn't a problem. I can handle that.
So a combination of girdling the adults, which will then not grow back, and a herd of goats to eat the young seedlings, and I think you can regain control of your property.
Oh, that sounds fantastic, Mike. I really appreciate the advice.
All right. Good luck, Jody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Fred, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, Fred. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you.
And where is Fred Fantastic?
We are doing really well in the western suburbs of Philadelphia.
Okay, very good. What can we do you for, Fred?
So we have Creeping Charlie that's come up early this season, early this summer season, and it has taken over a big part of our lawn.
Okay.
I've read quite a bit about it and found that it likes to grow in shady areas, but it seems to be growing right in the middle of a very sunny spot. Most predominantly, but it's growing across the lawn extremely quickly, and it's giving me concern that we're just going to have a hard time getting rid of it even through next year.
Well, you were supposed to pull it when it first showed up. You realize that if you don't, you know, if a vine starts crawling across your lawn, it's like somebody hanging a gun on the wall in the first act of a show. You know, it's it's going to get fired by act number three. Now, who cuts your lawn?
We have a gardener that comes once a week or two, depending on the season.
Okay, that clearly it's being cut too often. Have you ever measured the cut after he's done?
No, I haven't.
Okay, it needs to be 3 inches after he's done cutting it, or weeds will always take over. A lot of times these weeds are a sign of poor lawn care more than anything else. Who feeds your lawn?
We have not been giving it regular feedings.
You should have fed it for the fall. It's kind of late now, but I would give it at least a light feeding of corn gluten meal in the spring and then be prepared to give it a feeding next fall, like ideally right around September 1st, a nice organic feeding. How is the lawn watered?
We really don't do much watering other than what happens naturally unless we have a really dry spell.
And then what do you do?
We have a sprinkler that we move around the lawn. We tend to do it late in the evening or early morning so that it's not too hot out.
That's the wrong time. Yeah, that's not what you're avoiding. You always want to, when during times of drought, if you're going to water your lawn, you water deeply but infrequently. That's for hours at a time, but only once or twice a week and always ending first thing in the morning. You never want a lawn to sit wet overnight. That stresses it.
Okay.
But I have a feeling it's probably being cut too low, and it's also starving, which means that this weed, which doesn't need any food really, is going to outcompete it. So just a basic lawn care is going to help you a lot. Now, sooner or later, you're going to have to give it up and have a pulling party. You know, you're going to have to go out, preferably after a big rain, and pull a lot of the Creeping Charlie that's out there. You won't get it all, but get up as much as you can and throw it in the trash. And then I want you to go online. I want you to go to our website, youbetyourgarden.org, and go to garden,
okay,
and go to Garden Answers A to Z. And under C for Creeping Charlie, and also under L for lawn ivy, and G for gill over the ground, it's all the same plant. It's got a million different names. You will see a formula you will use next summer that uses 20 Mulesian borax on the leaves of Creeping Charlie to kill the plant. Turns out this plant is very sensitive to the element boron, which is the active ingredient in 20 Mulesian borax, you know, which all our parents used in the wash and everything. They still sell it. So
yeah,
you have to make the solution perfectly. It has to be exactly the right mixture of water and 20 Mulesian borax. And then you spray it on the Creeping Charlie vine when it's really hot out. And if you mix it correctly, if you take the time to measure everything perfectly and you spray it at the right time of year, the vines will wither up and die, and any overspray will not hurt your lawn at all. especially if we've allowed the lawn to grow back up to 3 inches in height. And then after that, I predict if you start caring for your lawn correctly, it won't come back. But if it does, then just be ready to make a new solution and spray it on the young plants, which are even more easily gotten rid of than an older established one.
That's great.
Okay, man?
Thanks a lot, Mike.
My pleasure. Good luck, Fred.
You take care.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. We'll have you rolling in the clover. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read off our first question of the day, please.
Well, Al in Mount Airy writes, I like your idea of using corn gluten meal in the fall to prevent lawn weeds, but I don't want to get rid of the clover in my lawn. In fact, I like to have more of it. Should I not use corn gluten meal?
Well, the short answer is that clover grows best in poor soil. So to help it compete well with grass, you would not directly fertilize your turf. Instead, use a mulching mower. The pulverized, nitrogen-rich clover and grass clippings these specialized mowers return to the turf will give your lawn and the clover a gentle feeding every time you mow. Now, Alexis, we have lots more questions about clover this week. Hit us with some more.
We also heard from Mark in Philadelphia who writes, I know most people want to kill the clover in their lawns, but I want the opposite, to lose the grass and get the clover to take over. Do you have any advice on creating a clover lawn? And finally, we heard from Misha in Rancho Cucamonga, California, who writes, we're trying to establish Dutch white clover as a lawn. It's taking a while, and summer wasn't the smartest time to plant, but keeping the soil moist has helped a lot. The problem is that it's getting overrun with weeds, which we diligently pull, but I'd have to quit my job to really keep things under control. The sassy guy in the garden center at Lowe's said that tilling just makes weed problems worse, and that any pre-emergent weed killer will salt the earth and prevent us from growing anything for a year or more. He was right about the tilling, but we need a way to kill the weeds before they sprout that will still allow our clover to grow from seed.
Well, there are three true members of the clover family. White clover, which is sometimes called Dutch clover, red, and crimson. Yes, Tommy James and the Shondells fans, there really is a crimson clover. A last crimson clover would not make a good lawn. It's an annual plant that dies at the first frost. But it's a dramatic one-season plant, growing up to 3 feet tall with beautifully colored blooms that attract lots of pollinators and beneficial insects. It's used by farmers and savvy gardeners as a green manure cover crop. Its deep roots naturally aerate the soil. And after it dies, the above-ground growth is either plowed under to nourish the following year's crop or just left on the ground to release its nutrients slowly without any tilling. Red clover is biennial. That's a plant that lives for two seasons. It also grows tall, 2 to 3 feet, grows fast, loves cold, hates heat, does not attract pollinators, and grows in the very worst soils. It's also used almost exclusively as a soil and drainage improving cover crop green manure. White clover is the best choice to try and grow instead of a lawn or for seeding into a lawn. In fact, white clover was a deliberate component of virtually all grass seed mixtures up until the 1960s. It stays fairly low, topping out at around a foot, can be mowed just like a lawn, handles foot traffic better than the other clovers, and tolerates summer heat better. But, like cool season grasses, it still doesn't like hot summers, and it may need a lot of water to survive them. It's also slow to establish, and although technically perennial, it isn't very long-lived, which means, like the shade-tolerant cool season grasses we use, it should be overseeded or freshly seeded every couple of years. The flowers do attract lots of bees, so sting allergic people should avoid it, and the rest of us should not go barefoot on it. Now, because white clover does behave so much like a cool season grass, I suspect it would do best when sown in late summer, when the heat is abating but the soil is still warm. Spring sowings require you to wait until the soil temperature is at least 60 degrees, and by then, stressful summer heat is generally right around the corner. to help clover be a lawn instead of just part of one, you should add as little direct nutrition to the soil as possible. Clovers have the ability to form a symbiotic relationship with soil-dwelling bacteria that enables the plants to take plant-feeding nitrogen out of the air, and so they kind of feed themselves. To make sure that this nitrogen fixation takes place, purchase a clover-specific inoculant and use it on the seeds at planting time. Now, to start out relatively weed-free, with a big tip of the You Bet Your Garden hat to that guy at Lowe's who badmouthed chemical herbicides, he's my new hero, make a stale seed bed. Till the area about a month before planting time, which would ideally be in mid-August. Rake away as much of the old green as possible. Level the soil. Water daily to encourage all of the weed seeds you uncovered and then planted to sprout, and then slice off the resulting seeds with a sharp hoe 2 weeks later. You should then be able to sow your inoculated clover seed, cover it with some weed-free soil, and have a good start on a cloverous lawn. Well, that sure was a lot of interesting information about clover now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over at your leisure, or your leisure, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes! My producer is threatening to not inoculate me with beneficial bacteria if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live. Like us on Facebook. Put the actual subject in the subject line. Like us on Facebook. And check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week, find the solution to hundreds of garden problems just like yours in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, download this week's podcast, and or like us on Facebook. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Kevin. Don't call me Merv Griffin. Our illustrious internet illuminators are Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar. Check out their fine work at our newly designed and really nifty website. Our social media director, Amanda McGrath, is already in a symbiotic relationship. Bursting with beneficial bacteria is Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Joanna Hatzis and Brent Rader are our nitrogen-fixing production assistants. Our esteemed editor is Al Covercrop Banks. I'm clearly the green manure in this equation, Mike McGrath.